Hi, I'm Danny Elfman.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Debbie Harry.
This is Chris Stein-Blondie.
This is Roland Orzabal from Tears for Fears.
This is Billy Idol.
This is Alex Ebert, a.k.a. Edward Sharp, giving the story behind the song.
Hi, this is Peter Chotti, host of The Story Behind the Song. Each month I speak to some of music's biggest artists to get the inside stories behind their most lasting and iconic songs. Join me for new episodes on the third Monday of every month on The Story Behind the Song from the Consequence Podcast Network, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Consequence of Sound Feed. I don't know about you, but now that spring has almost sprung, I think we could all use a little inspiration for these next couple months. And to get you there, we're going to share a podcast with you that's all about inspiration. On the Spark Parade podcast, our host Adam talks with artists and entertainers about a work that really inspires everything that they do. It can be anything from Shakespeare to South Park to an Al Pacino movie and more. So as you listen, you get to rediscover the work through that artist's eyes and get an even greater understanding of the work that they do. On the episode that we're going to share with you today, we're going to hear from the Aces frontwoman, Crystal Ramirez, who's absolutely obsessed with Paramore's Riot. If you were a little emo kid like me, you'll remember that cultural moment where Paramore went from being that emo punk band in alternative rock and really broke out into the mainstream with Riot. For Crystal Ramirez, hearing Riot absolutely blew her mind and inspires her to this day. If you like what you hear, check out the link in the show notes and follow that podcast wherever you get your podcasts so that you can stay up to date with every single episode of the Spark Parade as soon as it's released. So now, please enjoy the Aces' Crystal Ramirez's Spark is Paramore's Riot on the Spark Parade.
Hello, and welcome to the Spark Parade, where I geek out with artists and entertainers about their cultural spark of inspiration. I'm Adam Unz, at Spark Parade on all social media. Thanks ever so much for joining me. This week, I'm chatting with the Aces frontwoman, Crystal Ramirez, about her spark, Paramore's second studio album, Riot. As we all know, it's very fun for me when I can chat with people about stuff that really, really excites them and has a huge impact on their work. And that is very much the case with Crystal and this album. It's a fun, bouncy little episode, if I do say so myself. So let's get cracking. Quick Crystal facts. Crystal Ramirez is the lead vocalist and guitarist of the indie pop band The Aces. The seeds of the band started when Ramirez and her sister Elisa were preteens. The band solidified into its final lineup with the addition of McKenna Petty and Katie Henderson, and after releasing several EPs, their debut album When My Heart Felt Volcanic was released to great acclaim in 2018. Their second album Under My Influence was released in 2020, and their brand new album I've Loved You For So Long came out in June of this year. Spanning 11 tracks, the record sees the band reflect on their childhood and unpack how their early experiences with closeted love and religious trauma have influenced their relationships, mental health, and identity in the present. Quick Riot facts. Riot is the second album by American rock band Paramore. The album was successful in the United States, reaching number 15 on the Billboard 200 and achieving triple platinum status. It was also certified platinum in the United Kingdom and gold in Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. The lead single, Misery Business, is considered the band's breakthrough hit and is credited with introducing the band to a mainstream audience. And there you have it. We've done our homework, so now let's have some fun. Here comes my chat with Crystal Ramirez about Riot. Do you remember getting turned on to Riot or hearing it for the first time? Any of those memories?
Yeah, of course. When I was like probably like 10 or 11 years old, I just had a friend, like one of my best friends, was like, "Do you listen to Paramore?" And I was like, "No, what's Paramore?" She was like, "Oh my God, Paramore's the coolest band ever. You have to listen to Paramore." Because her older sister, who was like 15 or 16, was like obsessed with Paramore. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, as soon as she's like, "You have to watch the Crush, Crush, Crush music video." Like, that's, you're going to be your jumping off point into Paramore. And so I remember like going downstairs, because like when I was a kid, I was like 10 years old, I'm in that like millennial Gen Z cusp of like when I was a kid, like we still had like computer rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we still had a PC and the laptop, like a PC in the basement. You go down YouTube or play games or whatever. And so I remember going down and searching it on YouTube and just like, I remember that it's like imprinted on my brain, watching that music video for the first time and hearing that song for the first time. And like, it just like changed, it like changed my entire world as like a 10, 11 year old. So yeah, I remember it like really distinctly listening to Crush, Crush, Crush for the first time.
Yeah. I think, you know, this is a band that, I guess this is the case with most bands, that the visual style is, you know, a part of the package, but Hayley Williams in particular is just like the first time that you see her with that hair, just like everything about her and her stage presence, the way that she just like her attitude when she's singing and the, in these videos in particular for this album, it's just like, yeah, I can understand how that would blow a 10-year-old's mind.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm from a small suburb in Utah, and I was like really, really religious growing up. And so like that to me was like larger than life. Like seeing Paramore for the first time was like a window into the possibility of like, because I was just starting to kind of form our band as a kid with my sister. You know, I was like around that age where I think we started our band when I was like 10 or 11. And so that kind of was like the floodgates were open after seeing her as like, oh, this is a real possibility. Like, I want to be in the band. Like, I want to be like Hayley Williams.
Right. Right. And also the fact that all of them were so young, like Zach Farrow, when the band started, like when they started recording, he was like 13 or something. So these were people who probably weren't that much older than you at the time. So, you know, I'd assume that makes it even more accessible that it's like, wait a minute, these people are not too far ahead of me. And if they're doing it, then why can't I?
Yeah, 100%. I think also there was no women really in rock and indie music at that time. You know, a lot of the bands that were like surrounded and in the mainstream at the time, it was just like all men, all dudes, all young guys. And so coming from a small suburban religious town and being all women in a band, we felt like, you know, like we kind of just felt like aliens almost in a way. Like we, so to see someone like Hayley Williams that was like such a strong presence on stage was like, oh yeah, that's it. You know, like that's what we want to be. And that was huge for me to see like a woman on stage that was taking up space like that and was so insanely talented and was like, you know, a better singer and musician than like most singers in general, regardless of gender, you know, and regardless of how you identify. Like, I would say that Hayley, I think, is undeniably like one of the best vocalists of our generation. She's just absolutely insane. And so for me, I was like, yeah, I think that representation of being a woman and being a woman in like rock and indie music was like, I really needed that at a young age because I just didn't see that.
Right. And I the comparisons that get thrown around a lot when people talk about her, it are to people like Avril Lavigne and Kelly Clarkson, who were like people who were around at the time. And it's like they were women who sang songs that had some kind of rock adjacent element to them, but it's such a lazy comparison. And it's like, you know, Avril Lavigne, I would argue, was a little more commercial and manufactured. Kelly Clarkson for sure was manufactured. I mean, she came from American Idol. So, you know, and I don't want to detract from either of them. Like they have, you know, produced fantastic music in their own lanes, but this is a very different thing. And this was like a young woman who not only had this incredible stage presence, was an incredible vocalist and musician, but a songwriter as well. And for somebody that young to have these lyrics coming out of her brain, it was like, you know, yet another thing that was pretty, pretty remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that I really kind of relate to, I think as women, as queer people in general in music, and we get compared all the time to like other all-female bands. And like, I love other all-female bands. Like I am a massive fan of Haim. I'm a massive fan of Muna. I'm a massive fan of like the Bangles and the Runaways and like those kind of incredible icons. And there's so many incredible bands, like, you know, of queer people and of women coming up right now. But I do feel like when we first started coming up, and even still, like, we immediately will just get compared to all other female bands or queer bands. Like, they'll be like, oh my God, you sound just like so-and-so. Or like, oh my God, this is reminding me of this. And there's something about that that's like kind of cheapening to the whole, to what, to our, all of our individualities, right? Because it's like, well, yeah, but like, all female isn't a genre. You know what I mean? Like, people talk to us like it's a genre of music. Like, they'll say stuff like, oh, you know, I usually don't like all the female bands, and I really like you guys. And I'm like, I don't really even know what that, like, what do you want me to say to that? Like, I don't even know what to say to that. And like, that's, first of all, like an insult, but it's like inherently misogynist. And then secondly, all female or like a queer band, like, that's not a genre of music. Like, those, that's just like a type of person in the world who could make any type of music. Do you know what I mean? And so while I love to be, I mean, I love to be in the presence of such incredible artists such as Muna, such as Haim, such as Boy Genius, right? I'm not complaining about that because I deeply admire those artists, but I do think that we're very different. All of us are very different in a lot of ways. I think that there are tons of dude bands who sound literally identical to each other who would never even get compared to one another. Do you know what I mean? And wouldn't constantly be coming up. And I think the reason that this comes up as well is because of the, I mean, we can go down a rabbit hole in all of this, but, you know, we do live in like a patriarchal society and a misogynist society. And so there's a scarcity mentality for a lot of women and a lot of queer musicians and stuff of like, oh, can there be more than us? Can there be more than one? Like, is their moment going to take from my moment? And like, that's just the thing that's like programmed in you as a musician, is to be a musician of any kind, is to be competitive with each other, you know, as an entertainer, is to compete versus like find community in one another and lift each other up. And that's what in the Aces we've been trying to do, is like, some of our best friends are in an all female band out of Toronto called The Beaches. And we took them on tour and had them open for us all over North America last year. And like, we just put out a song with them. And I, you know, I think that we're trying our hardest to like, fuck, I don't know if I can swear on this, sorry.
Please do, please.
I was gonna say, just like, fuck all that. Like, I think that we're conditioned to feel like we need to compete with each other. But the truth is like, there's power in numbers, there's power in movements, there's power in collaboration. And like, we are, I'm just not fucking about that. I'm not about that. Like, I'm not about gatekeeping. I'm not about fucking holding only space for me and my band and trying to be the biggest in that. I'm like, no, we're all individual people who have plenty to give to this world artistically. And we would be fucking a powerhouse in numbers together. So we should all be touring together. We should all be making songs together. You know, we should all be lifting each other up. You know, I think that there's so much power in that as a community.
Right. And, you know, it is homophobia, queerphobia, and misogyny are inextricably linked. So when you have that intersection, it's like people thinking of these two groups of people that are very diverse groups of people. They're not, you know, queerness is not a monolith. Neither is womanhood. And treating people like individuals takes more work and more investment from people who, perhaps, I'm speculating, are not that interested, or at least not that interested in finding those distinctions. And that it's both like, here's a marketing tool. We can say it's a girl band or it's a queer band, and that's where we're going to find our audience. But it's also this kind of patronizing thing that's like separate, other. We don't need to differentiate between these things because they're all part of the same. It's all of a piece. You don't need to worry about saying every band is as individual, regardless of what their background is. And you can find, you know, sonic similarities with bands, but you actually have to look for those things. It can't just be they look the same, they identify the same way, and that means they sound the same, they are the same.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a pathetic way to look at the world. And like, sad. It makes me, it's gross and it's sad. It makes me feel bad for people who can only see in those terms.
100%.
And like you said, for you, it's like, you don't see yourself that way. You don't see the other bands who you get compared to that way. And it just takes a little bit of brain power and creativity to kind of dig in just the tiniest bit to understand the differences between the people. Yeah. It's not, it's very, very obvious differences.
Right. 100%.
Also, the thing that I find interesting about this album, when not just Hayley Williams, but the guy, I can't remember what his name is, the guy who produced this album, Dave Bendith. I read an interview with him where he was talking about Misery Business, and the band won't play that anymore because Hayley Williams, like, they got a lot of shit for people saying that it was misogynistic and that it was like doing a lot of that work of kind of pitting women against each other and saying that when there's a problem between a man and a woman in a straight couple, that it's the woman's fault no matter what, and yada, 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 and calling somebody a whore in the song. So Hayley Williams, you know, publicly said she kind of denounces all of that and that she
right.
feels like, you know, as a feminist, she doesn't want to support that kind of idea. And I think she performed it with Billie Eilish at a festival and just omitted the word whore. But in kind of doing some research for this, even that, she was, whatever, 16 when she wrote that song. And it was based on like a journal entry from a teenager because she was jealous that, I think one of the other, she had a crush on one of the other band members and he had a girlfriend and she wrote the song about that. And at the time when they were recording the song, she's like, I don't know that I want to say these things. I don't want this to be a representation of who I am. And it was the producer who was like, you said it, you say it, you said it, you sing it. That's, we're putting it on the album, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
so just thinking about those kinds of things, like the nuances, not just in the way that bands are presented when they have a finished product, but in the work of putting an album together, in the work of putting a band together, how many other influences in an industry like the music industry or any kind of entertainment where it's, you know, not the band in isolation. There are all these other forces trying to control things and manipulate things at the same time. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think this album is really interesting because, like, you know, she did write, they wrote it so young. And I was going to bring this up is like why Paramore continues to be one of my favorite bands is because of their evolution and continuing to grow in every regard. And I think I can only imagine, you know, from what I understand of Hayley being signed and of Paramore being signed, you know, they were signed so young and they were signed to a major and they're kids from like the South, you know, like Southern kids from the South. Christian kids from the South. And the culture down there, especially when you're like a 16-year-old, I mean, the culture in Mormon, Utah, where I was from, was incredibly misogynist. And, you know, that kind of thing, the jealousy, the misogyny within women is very prevalent of competing. And I can only imagine also on top of it, you're signed to a major label, you're 16 years old, and they want Shock Factor. Of course, they want you to say whore. You know what I mean? Like they want it to be, you're also in like the emo punk scene where, you know, it's angsty and gritty and messy and fucked up. And like, you want to stand out, you know, and have something to say. And so I can only imagine the pressure of being that young and the pressure to perform and especially being on like a major label and not being able to really develop and figure out who you are and being in the limelight from such a young age like that. You know, like the amount of things that we all do when we're like 16 years old that we're like, holy fuck, I hope nobody ever, ever like holds me to that statement. Or like, you know, I was like, I don't even know what the fuck I was at 16. I was like, yeah, who knows what I was saying, doing and the things that, I mean, I know I was a completely different person. I was really religious. I was like totally, I was not out. I was probably saying a bunch of dumb shit as a kid, you know, like as we all do. And so I think the thing I love about Hayley is like, that continual like accountability being taken. I think that she did that beautifully with Misery Business. I know she kind of, I think she sings it again, but she took a long hiatus from singing that song for that reason, which I think is really like really cool of her, you know, but also it is one of their most famous songs. And I think her coming back and maybe like switching out lyrics and changing it. I went to go see them at the Wiltern last Halloween. They had like a, kind of just like a two nights only sort of thing here in Los Angeles, Wiltern, like a smaller kind of intimate venue. And she kind of gives like a bit of speech before and kind of like, yeah, like, obviously this is not how I feel. Like, this is, I don't like, I wrote this when I was 16 years old, and the song is like a song that's obviously important to the fans, because it's literally probably the biggest Paramore song of all time. You know, outside of, there's a few other contenders like Still Into You, but yeah. And I think Paramore as well has always been a band that's been very vocal about creating spaces, safe spaces for queer people, for people of color, for any type of person. And that, especially coming from the South and coming from like the hardcore scene in that way, like I think that was really something that I grabbed onto super hard as a kid. Like I could feel that energy radiating from them. Like Paramore was for everybody kind of thing. And that community was for everybody. And so, yeah, that's why they still are to this day one of my favorite bands. I think that they're, you know, a force, and a force for good in the world of like the music industry and the world of fighting for human rights. I really do think that they're amazing that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that word, or that phrase, a force, thinking about, you know, I just watched the video for Misery Business. So thinking about that, because, you know, regardless of any qualms that she has about that song, it is a fucking banger. And like, it is, you know, it's like absolute classic, but also from their visual standpoint, that video that's like taking the album cover and kind of putting the whole band inside of it, they're just like jumping around, going crazy, and the energy is like electric. I think, you know, the Crush, Crush, Crush video as well. It's just very exciting, and, you know, you can kind of feel their enthusiasm coming through in the music. And sometimes with rock bands, I think it's people bouncing around but being quite self-serious about it. And this just feels like there's, you know, joy coming off of them that makes you feel like they're sharing the fun with you. It's not just about like trying to, you know, I mean, it is getting aggression out as well. You know, you can music can be a lot of things, but that joy really is the thing that sticks out to me.
Absolutely. I mean, Paramore, their live performance, I actually, was the first time I'd seen them, loving them for like over 10 years, was at the Wiltern this last year. And I think that there are artists that you see once in a while where you see them on stage and you're just like, they were just undeniably born to do this, like born for it. This is their purpose. This is what they were meant to do. The energy of her and the band as a whole on stage to me was just kind of like spiritual, almost. Like, I don't even know how else to say that. And I really do believe, like, even outside of me being a major fan, it even surprised me how like palpable that energy was, of just like this pure talent, this pure joy, this like radiance. Like everyone in the crowd was just like elated in this way that I've honestly like rarely been a part of. And I am a full-time musician. This is what I do for a living. You know, I go to show after festival after festival. I see every type of artist in the world. I see so many sets. And that was, even outside of just being one of my favorite bands, like one of the best, most joyful shows I've been to in my entire life. Like it was just, it's not a mystery why Paramore has been, is now seen and as complete like icons of our generation, but like also has been around and consistently making great music and consistently playing shows and growing for over a decade now. Like it's not a mystery at all.
Time for a quick break, because somebody's got to keep the lights on around here, but we'll be right back.
But yeah, it's not a mystery to me at all, you know, and it never has been, but even more so when you see them live, you know, you just realize like, whoa, this is their purpose. You know, they're very much in their purpose. And I think that that's why so many people just like adore that band.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, I think with artistry in general, to me, you can get better, you can learn, you know, how to play an instrument, you can learn how to use your voice in a certain way. But there are things about artistry that are just innate, that you are born with, that, you know, are, it's just a part of who you are. And with her, that's so apparent to me, again, because she was so young when they started out. And there's a lot of discourse about her being wise beyond her years in terms of her like lyrical complexity and the way she structures songs and all those things. And thinking about somebody being a teenager, writing the songs on this album, and you know, people talk about her just being extremely well read and just being absorbed in literature constantly and picking up, you know, different turns of phrase and, you know, the stylistic elements and whatever, and just using all of this knowledge that she's had in such a short period of time, in such a young life, to create this music. Also, I think they were homeschooled. Like, they didn't have much contact with other kids. I think the Farrow brothers met Haley in some kind of like homeschool meetup for like kids who are all homeschooled so they can socialize a little bit. So that kind of thing where they didn't have much contact with other people their age and then were really young and going on tour and were like homeschooled in the back of a van by their mom and like those kinds of things, that all of that, to me, it's so fascinating to have somebody be able to be this like worldly when a lot of kind of normal social interaction and the way that most people grow up was not part of her experience. I guess that's about 50 thoughts in one long paragraph, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I would assume they were probably homeschooled just because of how young she was signed. I think she was signed, she's like 14 or 15. And I think she was signed, they wanted to just sign mm-hmm. her
yeah.
as like a artist. Because they saw her as kind of like the next Avril or like the current the another Avril kind of thing, and she was just like, no, like I want to be in a band. Like you can sign me, but like I'm only signing if I can sign with my band. And so that's how I read that it kind of went. But yeah, I mean, I think like the combination of being well read and studying art, and then also just having that like you know universe. Given universal talent is just like can clearly you see what like that's created, which is this like incredible band.
Yeah. And just like a very curious mind, a very open mind. And you can see that in the evolution of the band, that she's always trying to explore new genres, new musical forms, do different things with the band so that it's not like each album kind of builds on the last.
Yeah. I mean, I would say Riot is like not even like my favorite Paramore album. I think it's maybe one of the most influential for me as like the beginning of my artistic endeavors as like a tween teenager. But like Paramore, I mean, like I'm a fan of everything they do. Like I just think everything that they do, everything that they put out is like better than the last. Like it's a step in a new direction. It's more interesting. It's more evolved. It's more matured. It's more refined. And that's the thing, like for me as well, is they're such a kind of testament to like honing your craft and like having a career, like a lot, like longevity within a music career. I think that the only artists we see nowadays are like people that explode on the first song they ever put out. And a lot of those people never follow up with anything that has quite the magnitude that their first project had, right? And that's really highlighted as an artist. Like I think the music industry, it's really, there's so much pressure on you to be young and to succeed on like literally the first note that comes out of your mouth, like for it to go viral. And I think with Paramore, what I've loved watching is just like the evolution of their career. Like they are truly the definition of a career artist. And that's something that I really aspire to be with my band and the Aces, and I aspire for us to be as a career artist. Like I hope that the best of my career is very much for me to work toward. You know, I think when I was younger, I would have said something different. I think when I was like 19, I would have been like, oh, I want to be huge right now. You know, I want to be like the biggest band in the world right this second. And now as like a 27 turning 28 year old this year, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so happy that didn't happen. Like, I'm so happy that the 19-year-old me wasn't, like, on spectacle for everyone in the planet to, like, have comments about, you know? I'm so grateful to grow in my artistry. I'm so grateful to be looking forward, you know, to be working my third record right now. And I can't wait for my fourth record, my fifth record. For me, this is just, like, a lifestyle. This is just what I do. Like, this is just, like, I don't know what else to do with myself besides like write songs, make music. Like I would do this regardless or not if it was something I made a career out of. I would be a creative. I would be doing something. And so I think that's why I love Paramore so much, is because they are very much that as well. I think like they won a Grammy on like their fourth album. their fourth, fifth album was like, for Ain't It Fun, was like the first like big award album for them. But like, I think that's how it should be. I think that you should be building your career up and ready for those moments, you know, ready for to receive that kind of acclaim and to get that kind of attention on you because you've been taking it in stride. And I think that that's why they've all, you know, our management's based out of Nashville and are friends with a few of the members of the band. And I only ever hear really great things about that band, that they're super humble and they're really nice and they're very down to earth. And they all just like live in Tennessee and do their thing and, you know, tour hard, but like are pretty recluse when they're home and just normal people, but so incredibly talented and so much in their purpose. And that's really like, to me, like they have like the most admirable career. They have a career that I would only dream of having. Is kind of like a beautiful, like obviously Riot, and that really is what like shot them up to be able to start having that success. But like it was just growth. Like if you look at Paramore now and the kind of music, like the record that they just put out versus like Riot, it's like there's so much evolution between all that. There's been so much exploration of self with Haley and the band and everything. Like there's I just look up to their career so much for that reason, because it's so full of growth and so full of, yeah, just like exploration.
And doing all of that in the face of what I assume is enormous pressure from the record company to not evolve and not change and to get like, oh, we found a formula, stick to that. We just want to do the same thing because that's what the kids want. That's what's selling records. So just keep doing it. And instead, you know, I guess the more successful they get, the more leeway they have to be able to kind of dictate terms for themselves, I would imagine, again. But like an album like After Laughter, where it's, that felt to me like a really sharp turn in a different direction. And it's, you know, still great. It pays off. It's not like a country band trying to make a metal album that just, they don't know what they're doing. And it's, you know, completely wrongheaded. This is like experimenting with different sounds, but having a really clear vision of how to make that happen and executing it in just the same, with the same level of like professionalism and artistry as everything else they've ever done.
Yeah, I think, I mean, After Laughter is one of my favorite albums, that, like probably in top two for me. I love that album so much. I think that album is like, that's what's been so remarkable with Paramore, in my opinion, is like, the way that they have evolved past even like the emo punk scene. I think that very few bands have been able to do it the way that they've done it. I think there were a lot of bands from that era that like just have, you know, kind of with that, when that movement kind of fell out, they also did, they weren't able to really evolve past, and they have those core fan bases of that moment, right? Of that time. And they always, cause that movement in that moment was so special, the emo punk movement. But I would say Paramore is maybe one of the only that have been able to evolve past that into exploring other genres while still maintaining the sense of identity. You know, like if you listen to After Laughter, like it's such a Paramore album. It's not like this thing that they're just trying on because they wanted to make something different. It's like, no, it's like, it's like that voice. It's that sound. Like it's just still so Paramore. Like it's so obviously a Paramore album to me. You know what I mean? Even though it is not really reminiscent whatsoever of like a Riot. It's way softer. It's way more like new wave. It's way more like kind of beachy at times, like, but it's still so very much preserving of their identity as artists, specifically of like Haley's lyricism and voice. And so I think that, yeah, like I think when you have really something to say and you have a purpose in the arts, like you're able to genre bend and still be yourself. I think you also see that with someone that I think does that really well is like Post Malone. I think Post Malone is incredible for genre bending, but it's still always him because it's like him. You know what I mean? He has such a strong identity, such a presence, such a sense of self. And I think Haley has that as well. It doesn't matter what she sings, like it's always gonna be her because it's her.
Right. Yeah. I think that is a lovely note on which to finish. This has been so much fun. Thank you so much for making time for me.
Awesome. Yeah, no, thank you. I could definitely just talk about this forever, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. Well, thanks again. I really appreciate this. Take care.
Of course. Thanks so much, Adam.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again to Crystal for chatting with me. The new Aces album, I've Loved You For So Long, is out right now. Okay, quick spark of the week from me. I went to Sonic Sphere at the Shed in Hudson Yards. Do any of those words mean anything to you? Hudson Yards is a neighborhood in New York. The Shed is a giant arts venue there. And Sonic Sphere is the thing I went to, which is, as the name suggests, a giant sphere that you sit in and listen to music. They had a few different programs to choose from with music from different artists, but when I went to see it, they played the first album by the XX. That's an album and a band I love. So it was great to listen to it because I hadn't heard it in a while. But yeah, you climb up a bunch of stairs and get into this giant sphere with seating all over the bottom half of it, and the album just gets played along to a light show. It kind of had planetarium vibes, and it was very fun, very relaxing, and just a nice, chilled way to spend an hour on a Sunday. So you should go, but you can't because it's finished. Wah, wah. Sucks to be you. Anyway, that's about it from me this week. Please remember to follow me on social media at Spark Parade. Put a little reminder in your calendar so you don't forget. And I hope you find something fun and relaxing to do this week, even though you can't go to Sonic Sphere anymore. Sorry about that. And until next time, bye.